This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Welcome to Campus Voices, where each week we look at some key issues that affect UK students, the UK campus, and the Lexington community. Campus Voices is created by Journalism 304 students with the help of the journalism faculty. Please send any questions to news@wrfl.fm.
Hello and welcome to Campus Voices. I'm your host, Hunter Mitchell. Today, we will be talking about STDs on the rise, and we will focus on the effects of the rapid outbreak of them, including AIDS, HIV, within the high school, college, and Fayette County community. STD stands for sexually transmitted disease. Anyone can get one, male or female. It's an infectious skin-to-skin infection that gets transmitted through unprotected oral, vaginal, or anal sexual activity. STDs can also be spread by IV drug use. They can be passed to an unborn child or through breastfeeding as a baby. No matter age, race, or gender, STDs are affecting individuals within our community. HIV/AIDS are contributing to the rise of STDs in Kentucky. Reporter Jordan Dillon reports on how AIDS is one of the diseases that can be contracted through unprotected sex.
STDs can be contracted by having unprotected sex with a new sexual partner or multiple partners at a time. According to the Center for Disease Control, an estimated 336 adults and adolescents were diagnosed with HIV in 2015. Kentucky ranked 26th out of 50 states in the number of HIV diagnoses that year. In 2015, the Kentucky Cabinet for Health and Family Services reported that the total number of HIV disease cases in Fayette region was 1,866. In 2016, 1,943 HIV disease cases were reported. For WRFL 88.1 FM, I'm Jordan Dillon.
Here to talk to you today is University of Kentucky Associate Professor of Health Promotion, Dr. Kristen Mark. Dr. Mark is a professor in kinesiology. She conducted a multitude of studies on women's sexual health and relationship satisfaction, among other things. She's an avid blogger for the Huffington Post, Good in Bed, Psychology Today, and Kinsey Confidential. We also have Lexington Fayette County Health Department's Lindsay McGar. McGar is a member of the Disease Intervention and Outreach Team. Lindsay has worked with UK sexperts to push for testing for STDs among college students. How are you guys doing today?
Great, thanks.
Great.
Lindsay, we're going to start with you. Do you think a lot of people realize how easy it is to get an STD, and why or why not?
Well, I don't think that's a clear-cut answer. That's a difficult one, but I guess the simple answer would be no. I don't think they realize how easy it gets or it is to contract an STD. A lot of the classes that I give, people always seem very, very surprised when I say, mm-hmm. you know, that syphilis rates are at an all-time high or that HIV rates are going up. Same with chlamydia and gonorrhea. So I do think, especially with young people who may not have been exposed to this information while growing up, maybe aren't super aware of how easy it is to get one or how much there is, you know, out there, basically.
Dr. Mark, is there an increase in reported HIV because more people are getting tested? And how important is it that those that are diagnosed are reporting that to the CDC?
Well, that's a couple of questions in there. So it's hard to attribute the rise directly to increase in testing because mm-hmm. some communities there isn't an increase in testing and we're still seeing a rise. Mm-hmm. And the importance of reporting it, I mean, we rely on that in order to get accurate statistics. So, yeah, it's very important that people are reporting their all STI diagnoses, including HIV. And there's a lot of preventative measures that can be taken for both STIs and HIV, including newer things like PrEP, for example, to avoid HIV infection. And so if you're aware that you're in a community that might be seeing an increase in HIV, then you know that, or if you're engaging in sex with someone who might be at higher risk, then that's, you know, there's options available for preventing. So all of those things contribute to seeking those prevention measures.
Okay. Mm-hmm. People put themselves at risk. You have something to add, Lindsay?
Well, I was just going to say that I just wanted to be clear that it's not the actual patient that reports it to Frankfurt. It's the doctor, wherever they're getting tested. They legally have to.
Okay.
And so that's how where DIS comes in when it is reported. If it falls into one of the counties that we cover, which is at this point, which it may change soon, but Fayette County Health Department covers 63 counties. So anyone who tests positive in one of those counties, after it's reported, trickles down to us, and that's when we do the investigation.
Gotcha. People put themselves at risk when they partake in unprotected sexual intercourse, including oral and anal sex. Reporter Dylan reports on who the STDs are affecting.
People are making decisions that put them at risk for contracting sexual diseases. In 2013, the CDC reported over 12,000 cases of chlamydia in Kentucky. It was also reported that an estimate of over 2,000 cases were diagnosed with gonorrhea. Both cases included people between the ages of 15 to 24. Community Outreach Coordinator for Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky, Jennifer Clay, says this group is at a higher risk for contracting an STD.
In the U.S., at least half of all new STIs each year are attributed to young people ages 15 to 24. So we see that young people are particularly at risk.
Not only is this particular age group at risk, they are also less likely to seek any kind of help after contracting a sexual disease. Clay says specifically college students are the hesitant ones because of the stigma that surrounds STDs.
Young people are often reluctant to get tested because of their fear of the testing process. They're afraid it's going to be difficult or painful or expensive. But the truth is, getting tested is actually pretty easy and much less painful than it has been made out to be.
For WRFL 88.1 FM, I'm Jordan Dillon.
Lindsay, are younger people at a greater risk for contracting a sexual disease?
Well, that's not an easy question either. I don't think they're any more at risk than anybody else who engages in at-risk behaviors. I think what makes them unique is, you know, you see the same trends as you do in other areas of the healthcare system as well. Young people, either they don't have insurance or kind of maybe that feeling of invincibility where it's not going to happen to me. I don't get sick. You add that in with, you know, there's not always the presence of symptoms. And so if young people aren't going to the doctor, if they're not talking to, especially young women, I think, who may or may not already be going to the gynecologist, there is so much stigma that surrounds STIs that people don't discuss sexual health with their doctors. They're, I don't know, afraid, you know, and that's probably a cultural thing a little bit too. But so, yeah, in certain ways, they are more at risk.
We've mentioned your background with the sexperts. So what are they doing specifically as far as educating the college community on the effects of those STIs?
Yeah. What I do with the sexperts is I come out here about twice a semester, I guess, and I do HIV testing. They put the event together, and I just show up and sit in a room, and the people come to me, and I swab their mouth. It is not painful. I promise. Worst case scenario, we do have a couple of HIV tests where it's a finger prick. But again, I think people can handle it. But I think what they do is outside of the testing event that I participate in, I think they go to different dorms. They offer STD classes, seminars. I remember years ago when I worked for another organization, we would come out and do like HIV 101s. And so I think it's really about education and access to condoms and other safer sex materials.
Gotcha. The best way to avoid contracting an STD is to use protection or abstain from having sex with risky partners. There are different forms of protection that work, while others fail to get the job done. Reporter Taylor Caponegro reports on the different forms of contraception.
Obtaining a sexual disease is the result of having unprotected sex. Sometimes condoms don't work. According to Consumer Reports Health, 7 of the condoms tested for strength, reliability, leakage, and package integrity earned a perfect score. Dental dams, another form of protection, are latex or polyurethane sheets used between the mouth and vagina or anus during oral sex. Dental dams, like condoms, can be ineffective at preventing STDs. They have an expiration date, can often tear, and must be kept in a cool, dry place. Dental dams can be purchased online or, in rare cases, some condom specialty stores. For WRFL-FM, I'm Taylor Caponegro.
Dr. Mark, why are condoms more accessible than dental dams?
You can always turn a condom into a dental dam by just cutting it down the line.
Okay.
And it's the exact same thing. So I think condoms are just used more frequently. People don't really think about the fact that you can contract an STI through oral sex. They think about oral sex as a safer option. Mm-hmm. And although, yes, it is a safer option, it is not a safe option. And so using dental dams or using condoms when giving fellatio, for example, is a good way to protect yourself. And in that segment, you know, there was a mention of condoms not being very effective, but they are quite effective, and they're far more effective than, say, the withdrawal method, which is quite a popular method that's used here on campus, or than not using anything at all. And so it's important to acknowledge that the condom is quite effective in preventing STI transmission.
What are your thoughts on condoms compared to dental dams? Is one more effective than the other?
They're made of the exact same material.
Okay.
It's just that they're shaped differently. And dental dams are often scented, so they might like taste like strawberries, or
okay.
which is a nice touch, right? But you really can use a condom the exact same way that you would use a dental dam, or using a condom, you know, by putting the condom on your tongue or something like that. You can do that as well. That's if you don't have access to a dental dam, you can absolutely turn a condom into one.
And just so everyone knows, the health department gives out dental dams for free.
Okay. Cool. Lindsay, what specifically should consumers look for to determine the quality? For instance, between different brands of condoms and things like that?
As far as I know, I've never really looked into any studies about the quality of different condoms. Usually when I encounter a client, man or woman, who refuses to use condoms, I really encourage them, you know, 9 times out of 10, that's not an official statistic, that, you know, but when condoms break or somebody doesn't get pleasure from using them, it's usually user error.
Mm-hmm.
You would not believe how many times I give a condom demonstration and young men and women have no idea how to correctly put one on. And so usually it breaks because they have not put it on correctly. They're not wearing the right size. Sorry, guys, you're not all magnums. And that's okay. So I think it's really about experimenting with different brands. There are tons of different kinds of condoms out there for every, you know, ribbed, flavored, some with lubrication, some without. So it's really just about finding one that you like, that you can wear and find pleasurable, and also one that fits correctly and knowing how to put it on correctly. So.
And lubrication goes a really long way.
Absolutely,
like,
yeah.
Putting a little bit of lubrication on the inside of a condom can improve mm-hmm. sexual pleasure for both partners. And also doing things like making sure that you reapply lubrication.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. lack of lubrication is one of the reasons that condoms break most frequently.
Absolutely, yeah.
So.
Okay. We've discussed that there are many different types of STDs, and some diagnoses are worse than others. And while some STDs can be treated, some cannot be cured. Reporter Jordan Dillon reports on the different types.
There are many types of STDs, including chlamydia, gonorrhea, herpes 1 and 2, and HIV. Each disease is treated differently depending on the diagnosis. Some STDs are curable, while others can be treated. Bacterial STDs can be cured with antibiotics if treatment begins early enough. However, viral STDs cannot be cured, but they can be treated with medications. There are some vaccines offered to protect against STDs like hepatitis B. Vaccines are only helpful to prevent sexual diseases. They do not cure a pre-existing diagnosis. The CDC reported that rates of acute hepatitis B increased by 6% in 2015. Reported rates of acute hepatitis A increased by 100%, and reports of acute hepatitis C decreased by 16%. Diseases like gonorrhea can be cured with proper treatment, but damage caused by the disease cannot be undone. Chlamydia is an often symptomless sexual disease that goes untreated. The CDC reported rates of chlamydia among women were 2.2 times greater than those among men in 2015. Kentucky ranked 37th among 50 states in chlamydial infections.
You wanted to clarify something with the lubrication, I'm going to give you a chance to do that real quick.
Great, thanks. If you're using lubrication with condoms, make sure that you're using a water-based lubricant. Other types of lubricants, like if they're oil-based, for example, will break down the latex of the condom and make the condom less effective. So making sure that you're finding a water-based lubricant is key in using lubricant with condoms.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Dr. Mark, do people realize the permanent damage that can be done by a sexual disease? We talked sort of about, you know, a lot of people might not necessarily realize how bad they can be, but especially with some that can actually can be fatal. Do you think people actually realize that?
I think that a lot of people do think that they're really scary, and that's maybe what's leading to lack of testing. And it's also what leads to a fear of testing. I prefer to take an approach that's like less scare-based, where it's trying to instead normalize, like one in four people will get an STI at some point in their life. It's not the end of the world. And so there are ways to treat them. And so I think that that's something that should be, really emphasized when it comes to STIs, because in schools, for example, we're shown these like scary pictures of genitals with these awful looking STIs on them. Well, 75% of the time there's no symptoms. And so that's giving us a really false impression of what an STI is. And that's doing everyone a disservice. So, you know, they're treatable. I think people maybe don't realize some of the longer term effects of not getting tested. And that's where it becomes problematic. Like if you have chlamydia without being treated for it, then sure, it can lead to longer term complications. Or syphilis, for example, particularly a bad one in stage three. So that's where it maybe people don't realize what happens when you don't get tested. Yeah.
Lindsay, did you want to add anything?
I had a thought like 2 seconds ago and now it's gone.
So. Of course, that always happens. Well, in reference to you, how do you think that people could become more aware about these permanent effects?
Well, I mean, any sort of cultural change starts with education. I think we live in a society where sex is stigmatized, to say the least. You're not supposed to do it until marriage. Women certainly aren't supposed to be promiscuous. So if they are, they probably feel like they have to do so in secret. And so that perpetuates stigma, that perpetuates this idea that you can't be honest with your doctor or somebody you're talking to at the health department about risk factors. And, you know, so that it just all kind of steamrolls into reasons that people don't want to get tested and don't want to be honest. Because when you're seen as dirty for having an STD or an STI, you're not going to be honest about it. And so if you're not getting tested, because like she said, most of the time you do not have symptoms, then you're not going to know anything's wrong until those, you know, you have neurosyphilis or pelvic inflammatory disease from chlamydia or gonorrhea, or you're sterile or whatever, you know, the long, or death, you know, in worst case scenario.
Dr. Mark, you unfortunately have to leave us here soon, but did you want to add anything before you had to go?
No, I think that it's really important to acknowledge how common STIs are.
Absolutely.
And that there shouldn't be stigma around getting tested. If you want a fun date idea, go with your partner to get tested for an STI. Make it like this thing that you do together so that you can, you know, enjoy being safe with one another.
Thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
There are different treatments for STDs that are curable while others can be monitored. Reporter Taylor Caponegro reports on the importance of getting tested.
Kentucky Department of Education's instruction on how to develop knowledge, attitudes, and skills is tailored depending on the age level. In 2015, the CDC reported that 27.2% of ninth graders reported ever having sex, compared to 29.6% in 2005, while 35.7% of 10th graders reported ever having sex in 2015, compared to 46.5% in 2005. Kentucky State Academic Health Standards address the importance of instruction for both physical and mental health. The ultimate goal of the Kentucky Department of Education is to not only improve health, but educate on prevention that will reduce risky behaviors. High school students receive completely different educational classroom instruction than elementary and grade schools. College students are offered free testing and help locally from the University Health Clinic. For WRFL-FM, I'm Taylor Caponegro.
Lindsay, in that package, we heard that the number or the percentage of adolescents partaking in sexual activity has actually decreased. So if so, why do you think there's been a rise in the STDs that have been reported?
Well, I definitely think, you know, there has been a push for abstinence-only education, definitely in our schools. Not every county has the same standards, and not every individual receives the same information as they go through school. And so, you know, I've encountered students that never got any sort of sexual education. And so, like I said earlier, with this kind of cultural undertone of we don't talk about sex because we don't have sex, again, it all kind of steamrolls into young students coming of age and, you know, kind of fulfilling this biological need to have sex, and they don't have the education, they don't have access to condoms, they don't have any idea how to go about getting tested. And so even though less or fewer students or young people are having sex, again, STD rates still continue to rise.
Coming off of that, what would you say then would be the most effective way of teaching and educating about sex education without overstepping those boundaries?
I certainly don't mind to overstep boundaries. I gave a talk yesterday at the Hope Center for Women, and I was like, I'm going to offend you, and that's okay, because you need to be offended. Mm-hmm. And even going a step further, you need to not be offended when I talk about anal sex, mm-hmm. or cum or vaginal fluid or anal fluid, because this is a natural part of our bodies. And so I think it all goes back to education and reducing the stigma that comes along with sex.
Do you think that the education that's offered at places like UK is taken advantage of by students?
I think sometimes. I know this year we have had a much bigger response to the HIV testing events that I come and help out with. We used to have maybe, you know, a couple years ago, two or three students that showed up the whole day to get tested. Now, in our three-hour window, we have to turn students away.
Wow.
And so that's a huge improvement. And so I think as word spreads and advertising gets a little bit better, I do think students are more aware and taking advantage of it.
Testing is the only way to ensure that you are clean of an STD. However, not everyone goes for testing as regularly as they should. Mm-hmm. Reporter Taylor Caponegro reports on the misconception with testing for STDs.
Once you've had a sexual transmitted disease, you can get it again. You cannot become immune to an STD, and that is why testing regularly, especially when you are partaking in risky sexual behaviors, is important. Community Outreach Coordinator for Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky, Jennifer Clay, says there is a false assumption about STD testing.
Unfortunately, for some time, we have been dealing with a really problematic and misleading stigma surrounding sexually transmitted infections. And this has led to people feeling like discovering you have an STI, whether the sort that is treatable or curable, really that it's just the end of the world.
She says the explanation to the spike in STI rates is not negative.
More folks are comfortable getting tested because of the work that has been done to try and erase the stigma surrounding STIs. And so as people are more comfortable getting tested, they are finding out, you know, what infection they may have and getting treatment. And so really in that case, that explanation for a spike in STI rates is ultimately kind of a positive one.
Treated STDs can come back when you don't take your medication correctly, become exposed to a new STD, or continue contact with a risky partner. Testing is the first step in the right direction. For WRFL-FM, I'm Taylor Caponegro.
Lindsay, how late is too late to get tested?
It's never too late. Even if you go on to find out that you may have had an STD for a long time. Let's take HIV, for example. What HIV does is, once the virus enters your bloodstream, it attacks your white blood cells. And that's how, over time, your immune system starts to suffer.
And so when somebody comes in to get tested, and let's say they have a reactive or a positive test, at the health department, we refer them to the infectious disease clinic here at the University of Kentucky. They will then do a whole bunch of blood work, and they will figure out the person's CD4 count or their white blood cell count. And so I have seen people with a white blood cell count of 2. They basically have 2 cells left trying to keep them healthy. And once they're on medication,
it rebounds. Now, once you have an AIDS diagnosis, you don't go back to HIV, regardless of what your numbers are. But you can be that close to death, basically. And as soon as you get on medication, you can still come back from that. Same with syphilis. You know, I have seen people with neurosyphilis who have lost sight in one eye. I had a client the other day who had gone deaf after the syphilis had spread to his brain. And even still, if you get tested and you find out you have it, you can come back from that. And so it's never, ever too late. It's just unfortunate that some people don't realize they have something until they've started to get sick.
So there could be consequences to it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's still, you know, that it's too late to actually
right.
come in. Okay.
Right.
Okay. So what advice would you give to those who are afraid to seek help?
Well, fear is okay. You know, we are all products of our society. We are all products of the same narrative that we've been taught, like I said earlier, that sex is dirty, that we shouldn't be promiscuous, that we should be abstinent, you know, whatever your narrative was. Can you repeat the question, actually? My mind just went completely blank.
It was, what advice would you give to those who are afraid to seek help?
Oh, right. Yeah, fear is healthy, but it's about taking responsibility for your health. And, you know, in my line of work, a lot of times what I have to do when somebody's positive is contact their partners. And so that part of what I do is taking that fear away from people. You know, oh my gosh, if I have something, I'm going to have to tell my boyfriend or my partner or whatever the case may be. And so that's where we step in and we kind of take that load off of people. Hey, I'll contact your partner. I won't tell them anything about you or who told me this. And so, yeah, we do what we can to help reduce that fear. But at the end of the day, I always tell my clients, you know, this is your health. It's better to know than to not know.
Yeah. And it's actually a perfect segue because our next question is, if you are afraid, what would be the best way to tell your partner that you have an STD?
Let me do it. That's the easiest way. it's not an easy conversation, and that's okay. You know, I joke around that my job is to break up relationships, and I'm sure I have. You know, I've had people call me back and say, are you calling about his blood pressure? And I'm like, can't tell you anyways. And so, you know, if you are in a healthy relationship, maybe somebody had made a mistake and stepped out of that relationship. Part of being an adult and a part of being a good person is being able to take responsibility for that. And if you love and respect your partner, then I guess it goes without saying that you should care about their health. And so look at it from that point of view, you know, is that if they have been exposed, if they had contracted something, then if they don't know, they can get sick. And so, yeah, it's not an easy conversation to have, but you need to sit down and talk to them and tell them what's happened and what you've tested positive for. And if it's been reported, and if you're absolutely not comfortable with that and it's been reported to the state and I come knocking at your door, then I will most certainly do it for you.
Thank you to our experts, Dr. Kristen Mark and Lindsay McGar. We now have a better understanding on the rise of STDs in Kentucky within the high school, college, and Fayette community. It's important to be aware of the risky sexual behavior that contributes to the rise of sexual diseases. To prevent sexual diseases from worsening, going for testing is necessary. Thank you for joining us for tonight's Campus Voices. Join us in 2 weeks when we talk about adoption and foster care. Stay tuned for more commercial-free programming on 88.1 WRFL FM Lexington, Kentucky. I'm Hunter Mitchell.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm, and of course via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.